live. What's up?
Hello, how are you?
You gotta love friends who are ADHD. You couldn't even wait.
I couldn't. It was really hard.
Oh my gosh. Dude, what up, man?
Yeah, not much. Just, you know, waiting on you.
Are you good now? You want to wait?
Yeah, I want to wait. I'll be patient.
Oh man, welcome to DLW Live. This is your host, Darius Williams. Dude, you know what's crazy?
What?
There was a tornado last week.
Yeah.
And then I went on vacation.
I know.
So I'm glad that we made this work out.
I know.
Michael, he won his championship game?
Lost.
Oh, that's right.
He lost. Bad. Like 40-5.
Oh, my gosh. He made it to the championship. I should be laughing. Oh, no.
It's because, so like, the YMCA league didn't have like a lot of teams. So they had to like ask like AAU teams to join.
How old is Michael again?
10.
He has time.
Yeah. And so this team, when I knew when their uniforms were like made and like well done,
oh,
and it wasn't just like a jersey from the YMCA.
Oh man, there's like whole channels dedicated to following 10-year-olds who are literally dunking.
Yeah.
There's like a 7th grader right now who's 7 foot in the 7th grade or something like that.
Yeah. No, his team, it's, I mean, they're good. Like, they are good. And the other team was just better. Like,
oh, it, man.
They had been balling for life.
Okay.
Like, ball is life. So,
welcome to DLW. Like and subscribe if you haven't already. This is where we have generational conversations at the intersection of faith and culture. I get to hang out with friends on this show, man.
No, it's really cool.
Yeah, this one is not really a friend, though.
I'm a frenemy. Oh. That's okay.
Hey, everybody, this is Dynasty. She is, man, she is ADHD. Squirrel girl. She is Mrs. We're going to talk about blackpeoplemeet.com. Superstar. Platinum profile. She is. No, man, she's an incredible friend. She's an incredible mother. She's an incredible wife. She's an educator who taught me a lot in my time in education, particularly in the charter school world. She is a dynamo, an absolute savant when it comes to taking care of people and loving them well and passionately. She is a sister, for real. And in honor of Women's History Month, apparently, the first female person on the show.
Oh, yay!
Yay! You made it!
Yeti.
Diversity quota. Hey, yo. Oh, man. And that's my introduction to you.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Williams.
I can't stand it
already. This is Darius. He is a book hoarder. Okay. I just want to let y'all know that. Okay. If you didn't know, now you know. But also, fun fact, my first manager here in St. Louis.
That's crazy.
I know, right? And he is a servant leader, truly family that we have found here, him and his beautiful wife and little sweet son. I'm going to actually say nice things because I'll wait for all the savage things later.
Oh, dude, that means a lot. You know what's funny? When we first met, it was virtually.
Yeah.
Our guy, KG, Dr. Graham, shout out CEO Kairos.
Yeah.
I remember him being like, oh, you got to talk to Dynasty.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then this is right after you had given birth to?
To Matthew.
Yeah. Was it? Or was it right before?
No, it was before.
It was before?
Yeah, because I think I talked to Jack first.
Yeah.
And then I talked to you because Jack was like, hey, we hired someone.
Yeah.
Talk to him. And I said, okay.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was a great convo. I mean, I think immediately we touched on like life, faith, family.
So much in the first conversation. I said, okay. No, you know what we touched on?
What?
I think when you had texted me and you're like, hey, this is Darius. Do you have a moment to talk? And I was like, 757.
Oh, yeah. VA in the building. Let's go.
Is that, are you from? And you were like, yeah. And I said, stop.
Yes.
Look at God.
Man.
Like, I'm from Virginia.
What a joyful conversation.
I do remember that. I remember seeing the 757 and I was like, oh, okay. In Missouri? Okay.
Dude.
Yeah.
And then you pulled up.
Then
all of a sudden you were working for me. I'm like calling her for advice and she's like, oh yeah, now I'm on your team.
Now I'm here.
I'm like, what? What is happening?
No, I felt so seamless though. We've all had conversations. It just felt so seamless. The transition and everything.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
But I feel like it was that summer after, or maybe was it the second summer? Maybe it was the first summer when you had came. Yeah, I think that's when we went from, oh, like she tight,
yeah,
to, oh, we tight. Like,
yeah.
That's my sister.
Yeah. I think it was like the second summer. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was when we were out recruiting and they pulled up with the strap. For me, the conversations we had after that, I think really was like, she's family. Like,
yes, I think. When you found out and you were like, I remember because you called me and you're like, I need to call Sherman and apologize.
Yo.
Like, what just happened? And I was like, yeah.
To give y'all context. So me and Dynasty both were recruiters for a charter school here locally. And, you know, we were just kind of casually doing our thing.
Canvassing door to door.
In the hood.
Right.
South side.
Yeah. And, right, right.
Dynasty was like, get me out of St. Louis. Hey.
I tried to run up in someone's house that I was talking to. I said, do you want to hear about, let me come in.
Let me tell you about.
Let me come in and we can close the door.
This is my Kairos moment. The opportune time.
Yes. So I never went recruiting again after that.
That's crazy.
Canvassing.
Canvassing.
Because that was, yeah.
That's funny, man.
It was a time. A time was had.
Oh, gosh.
A time was had.
But, man, I think after that, I think it was just moment after moment of, man, just journeying in faith together, journeying in family together, journeying, navigating small baby together, journeying our work situation together.
Yeah.
You know?
We trauma bonded.
All love.
It was, but more so, I think what made it really work was is like when I was down, you would be able to like bring me back, and then I felt like when you had a moment, I tried really hard to like, hey, it's not going to be forever. Let's figure this out.
Right.
So I think that's what made it work.
Vice versa.
Yeah.
No, I would 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
And now you're here.
And now I'm here. Here I am. You should have heard all the things that I was saying before.
We should have just recorded.
You should have
pre-record.
You should have been like, what?
Eventually when we get like subscribers and a community, we're just gonna record the pre-record.
Listen, there was gold.
Oh man.
There was so much being said.
Nothing left for the podcast.
Nothing.
All right. Hey, sign it off.
Yeah.
Follow us on social media, like and subscribe. We will see y'all next week.
Yeah, because that's done. Done.
Over.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I can't with
you. But you definitely need to do that. And don't tell people you're recording. That's the best part.
Oh, is that the best part?
Make people come in, pretend like you're setting up like you did.
I feel like that's a lawsuit. Like, I'm happy that I have friends on this, but it'll be the one time.
Right, you're right.
Friendship over.
You're right. Well, maybe after they keep watching your show a bit, they'll be like, wait.
Some wild stuff that was said.
He sets you up, so get ready. So, yeah.
People get ready. Oh, man. Okay.
Okay.
Hey. Okay.
Hello.
What is happening? I miss hanging out with you every day, man.
I know.
Okay. Number one topic today.
Okay.
It's, you know, by your choice.
Yeah.
I mean, voluntold choice.
Yeah. Very voluntold.
Hey, man, let's talk DEI.
We're not allowed to.
Oh, that's right. Ooh, what happened again? Ooh. Yo, let's...
We're not allowed to talk about that anymore.
Hey, let's have some fun, man. So this show, as for those who know me, man, I'm not political, but I appreciate politics. I appreciate the democracy that we have and the opportunities that we get to talk about topics like this, because they impact our workflows. They impact our lives, our kids. Mm-hmm. And so, man, I just want to give everyone a little bit of context around DEI. For those of you who've been sitting in a box for some reason and haven't liked and subscribed yet and have no idea what's going on in the world, President Trump in January, he dropped several executive orders. I mean, right out the gate, right when Black History Month is about to hit, he decides to drop, and I kid you not, the first one was ending racial and wasteful government DEI programs and preferencing. That's the name of the executive order. All right. And that was mandated DEI related initiatives across all federal agencies, basically eliminating a lot of those programming. I had a lot of friends lose jobs because of that. Next thing that he did was an executive order. It was called Ending Illegal Discrimination and Restoring Merit-Based Opportunity. Right. This was all about employment discrimination. This was, I think, 1965. There was a executive order that was made that basically said you can't discriminate on the basis of race. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is what we would maybe consider more of the affirmative action based one that ensured equal employment opportunities. You were about to say something. Go ahead.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was listening. It was like church. I was agreeing.
The deacon. Yeah. You're preaching, preacher.
Yeah.
I haven't even said that.
Yeah. I was just listening.
I was just listening. Dude, I wanted to talk about this, and I've been waiting to have this conversation for a while. Yeah. And I was trying to think about which one of my friends made the most sense. Because I try to make the shows tailored to my relationships.
Yeah.
And I feel like as an educator, this one probably was a lot more relevant.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just kind of maybe wanted to start by hearing how do you see this sort of impacting the space in and around education?
I can definitely say, like, I think about, like, so much. Like, it's interesting because though, you know, he put that executive order in, I see schools still trying to, like, make sure people do feel included.
Yeah.
Recently, my son's school is doing like a multicultural night, and they want it there. Like, if you would like to participate, you know, here's a list of things that you can do, whether it's music or food or like art, please, you know, bring it. And we would love to like display it and, you know, have a night where, you know, we can talk about those things. And I think that it's interesting because I think this is the first time he's ever done something like this. And it almost feels like in the midst of it all, like, is that why you're doing it? Like, I'm not sure. But I also have like my feels with that too.
Yeah.
In the sense of like, you want me to display things so people can walk around and look.
Yeah.
Like,
it's weird. I think we got to name the thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have to name the thing when it comes to DEI programming.
Yeah.
It's, we want things to be wider. Mm-hmm. And the cultural stuff, we want to be able to bring on stage when it's convenient.
Right, right, exactly.
And I think this has been my biggest issue when it comes to, it's been, when you say make America great again, mm-hmm. what are we really talking about? Right? And if we're being brutally honest, are we talking about assimilation, right, which is people who are non-white? Mm-hmm. Are you assimilating into white culture,
right,
which is American culture? Or is it, man, do we really truly want to be a melting pot?
Right.
Where diversity is something that is a hallmark of who we are fundamentally as an American people.
Right.
And that just isn't something displayed. That's, you're dealing with real life.
Yeah.
Dealing with real culture. You're dealing with real people experiences that are value and valuable. And so it's this, for me, it's this tension between Black History Month mm-hmm. and what does it look like to every single day value Black history in America and the impact of Black people within the society, right? There's Asian History Month, Native History Month, right? But again, I feel like the language in and of itself is it's tailor-made to isolate than to unite. But I think even then the idea of what I would argue, I have huge friends who are Trump supporters, right? They would say, this is good because we shouldn't have these buckets. We shouldn't have a Black History Month. We shouldn't have a Women's History Month. We shouldn't have an Asian History Month. We shouldn't have a Native History Month, right? But when we are failing to tell the full history.
Right. Then why, right? You're not always like honoring and respecting, I mean, how this country was really built.
Yeah. Even the way that you were talking about that dynasty, it was weird. Like, it's almost cringe where it's, if you want to experience a multicultural, you can't. But again, I think this is one of my biggest issues with DEI.
Yeah.
In terms of the executive orders and what it assumes. We don't assume white culture in any of these conversations. We don't assume it.
No.
We can't actually look and name, oh, like that's white culture. Mm-hmm. Right. So when we think about this, when you have this kids situation and it's this potluck of different cultural experiences, if we really want to be equitable, we got to start naming white culture for what it is.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting to have a multicultural night, but your staff doesn't represent that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't think that I've seen one person of color at their school.
Yeah.
And I know that there are Black and Brown, Indian, Asian, Hispanic kids that go there and they don't see anybody that looks like themselves at all.
Right.
And it's,
well, you know, there's been a lot of debate about that too, because one of the things that is really hotly debated is people of color in education becoming educators, right? Like wanting to see more of that. But I know in the area that y'all live in St. Charles is predominantly white. And so when we think about the types of kids in the public school system, you know, I don't know, I can't fault Betty Lou for wanting to be a teacher, but I think there is still an approach, right? There's a way to honor and live equitably. I think this is one of the reasons why, again, like I love being Christian, is because Christ never, he never said assimilate to a race. Mm-hmm. He always, our culture, he always said kingdom culture is first, and it's in kingdom culture that all cultures can thrive, that all ethnicities can thrive as they exist, who they are. And I think this is the thing that bothers me the most about DEI or whatever you want to say in terms of what's happening here is it's assuming that the heart is just. And that people are thinking about others in a way that's equitable inherently. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, no.
At all. No. It's crazy.
It's bonkers. It's bonkers. There's, what is it? There's a, what is it? I think, I don't know if it's Utah or California, but it was talking about, the movement around books. I know I was also in Florida, mm-hmm. getting rid of certain books within the curriculum because they're too DEI. I know there's a lot of things that are rewriting Texas, which is the number one writer of history books. They're coming out with new curriculum around history, literature, and as it pertains to DEI and even the Civil War.
Yeah.
Right. It's not about slavery. It was about economics, which slaves are economics. Right. Like it's this recoding and rewriting of history to, it's like taking a brown fence and just lying, just layering it with white paint and just relayering it with white paint every year. Right. Like, because again, the irony of it all is if we are teaching full history, we gotta teach it for what it was and how it exists. But if we're not teaching it in a way that fundamentally tells the truth, then again, it just reaffirms, I don't know how else to put this. I'm gonna put it this way. I think we do a disservice, not just to Black kids or Asian kids who want to see themselves in curriculum, but I think we do a disservice to white kids.
Yeah.
I think we do a disservice to kids who aren't going to be able to see equitably the history of America and what it means to be America. It's why I think the Langston Hughes poem has so much weight in today's society. I too am America. It's because it's almost as if there's a constant fight as a Black man. Shoot, man, as an Asian woman, to just be included in literally the history books.
Yeah. I think that something that I learned a long time ago was I'm first generation. My parents came here from Cambodia. And I remember there was a genocide there, right? Like a million people died. And I remember like looking at it and it was like, in different states, it depended on like where I was, but in like Virginia, at least they had like a full page about it, right? Like, this is what happened. Why did it happen? Communism, the genocide. And then it's like, as I moved in along in education and I would ask kids like, oh, did you guys learn about the Khmer Rouge? And they're like, no. They're like, where is Cambodia?
Jeez.
Oh, okay.
Jeez.
Okay, cool. So like, to see that it was, you know, when I was growing up, like one full page of my history book to now being like one sentence.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's crazy.
Jeez.
So there's definitely change. And I think that kids should know about it.
Man.
And it's, you know, I think it's sad to see. Because now at this point, people are like, where is Cambodia? Is that like in the Middle East?
Yeah. That reminds me, I think there was a survey, and I'm not going to quote the stats because I don't think that's fair. I don't know them off the top of my head. But it was interviewing people from Tulsa, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, and they were asking them, did they know about Black Wall Street and what happened at Black Wall Street with the U.S. Army bombing
right.
a predominantly Black community.
They had no idea.
No idea. Mm-hmm. And we're talking within two generations. So when I think about DEI programming and exactly what you're saying, if we aren't critically, I want to put it this way. Our minds are hardwired to make things easier.
Mm, yeah.
And it takes so much work to do things the right way.
Yeah.
And there's something about being human that's okay.
Right.
Right. But when it comes to equity, mm-hmm. when it comes to valuing others in a way that is learning, knowing, and honoring the history, mm-hmm. if it takes teachers more work to teach that every year.
Yeah.
To try to make sure we don't mess up the language here and get in trouble in this way because the laws now say this and I'm not trying to be this way and that way. It just becomes easier to teach from the book.
Yeah.
And then there's a generation of teachers who are going to be raised as history teachers. This is all that they've known right. how to teach.
Right.
And so within two generations.
Yeah. I mean, it all just kind of disappears.
It just disappears. Right. Yeah. It's rewritten the way that you want it to be written.
That's why you need to keep fighting, keep asking questions, keep learning, keep reading.
Yeah. Do you feel like in your home, that's like, are you teaching your kids about your history?
Yes. Sherman has been really, really great about making sure that the kids are like learning about the Cambodian culture. And, you know, there are still things that like Lee and Nick, when they come over, they love talking to my mom about like, what was it like, you know, living in Cambodia, you know, before the genocide, and what was it like afterward? Mm. What was it like living in like those like refugee camps?
Right.
And the kids are around and things like that. And I mean, for a while, Mackenzie, because she's so little, you know, she didn't know. But like at some point, what was it, like at 3 or 4, I was like speaking Cambodian to her. And she was like, I don't understand Spanish. Stop speaking Spanish to me.
Spanish.
I was like,
hey, yo,
girl, this is Khmer, but okay. I was like, I'm not Spanish. I'm not Hispanic. I'm not Latina. I was like, we're Asian.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm brown. And I was like, yes, you are brown, but yeah, you're black and Asian. And so it's like, because she's so young, like that's something that Sherman does a really good job of like instilling. Like she'll say like, I'm brown. He's like, yes, but you're black. And she's like, I'm not black. I'm brown. And he's like, yeah, the color of your skin is maybe lighter. And he's like, but brown is all sorts of blacks. Like, mm. And she was just like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
But we do a really good job of like making sure, like when it comes to the food, they be eating it. Baby, they tear it up. Like they love it. The language is, I think it's difficult because I don't speak Cambodian to them all the time. It's like Spanglish, but with Cambodian. Mm. So like there are some words that I say in Khmer, and then there's some, you know, I speak English. So like they know like very, very, very basic things. Like they know how to count to like 10. Or like they know like if I say like stop in public, mm-hmm. they'll listen, or
right.
I'll like be quiet or something. But like the language is hard because in my opinion, when I was growing up, my parents, they spoke Cambodian to me because, you know, that's our primary language at home, but they also tried to learn English. Mm-hmm. So they like did a little bit of both. And because I'm super like, I became very like Western, like I'm super American when it comes to like, and I think it's something about like, you always want what you don't have kind of thing. Mm. Right. So it's like every night my mom would cook rice and I'd be like, what about that macaroni and cheese? Like, can I have some of that? And she'd be like, no, you better eat this rice and fish. So it's like, you always want something that you can't have. Right. So it's like, I became like, I was young. I didn't know better. Right. And then, you know, obviously now that I'm an adult, like I'm definitely like more like immersed into my culture, trying to like learn more because, you know, after my parents pass away, like that's, I'm the only person that has to continue that.
Right.
Like there's nobody else.
Right.
All of my grandparents are dead. And it's like, we are.
Yeah. What does that look like with your kids?
Right. And so I think that, you know, they do a good job of like wanting to learn, but you can never learn enough until you go to Cambodia, right?
Yeah.
Like once you're there and you see and you feel and you smell and you hear, like living in it, like you really truly immerse yourself.
Have you taken your kids to?
No. Nah.
Why you say it like that, though?
Because it's so expensive.
Oh, man.
It's so far. Man. Like, I got 20,000 kids. So it's like 20,000 times 20,000. I can't afford those plane tickets. That's hella expensive.
Yeah.
So, no. And then it's like there's busy season. So it's like the time we would want to go is obviously during the summer. But that is when it's the most expensive for the tickets. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and then you can't just go for a week. You're like traveling for more than 24 hours.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to like really enjoy it. And so,
I think that makes a lot of sense, man. Would you ever want to teach your kids the language?
Yeah.
In a real way?
in a real way. Mm-hmm. But I need to learn the language myself. You know what I'm saying? There's levels to it.
Why you sound like Awkwafina?
Spanish level one, Spanish level two. My mom speaks like doctorate level. I'm freshman. Freshman Spanish one.
You there though.
Like, right.
Yeah.
And it's more so I understand better than I speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, like, for sure. Cambodian is the most, like, I think it's a very difficult language because one word, there's like seven, like
tonal, very tonal.
Yeah, like it will be like tape, but I'll say it one way. But then there's 27,000 different ways to say this kind of
thing. Is it similar to Vietnamese where it's both, it's not symbol based, it's written, but also tonal? Like, you know, Vietnamese, right. It's not symbols, it's written.
Yeah.
It's heavily influenced.
Yes.
By French.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And it's like, I asked my mom, I was like, teach me the alphabet. And she was like, nah, it's too hard. And I was like, A, B, C, D, E, F, G is hard. And she was like, nah, it's
because it's
sound.
Yeah. It's
and tall, she was like, yeah. And like, she tried, she was like, Sherman, and I asked, and she was like, it's cool. Cock. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, that's really hard. How am I supposed to? Okay. So,
yeah,
because like if she is telling me, an 80-year woman, that learning the alphabet is going to be difficult for me, then because difficult for her,
man,
I'm going to trust her on that.
It's that full immersion at that point, man.
Right.
Jeez.
Now, I think if I went to go and live with Cambodia, where I hear it all day long, no one's speaking English to me, yeah. I'm forced.
Yeah. You know, I was, when I studied abroad in Italy for 4 months.
Right.
I was fluent. I was ordering food in Italian.
Right.
I remember when I was in Italy, there was a guy. He was an old Italian man. I was studying in Venice at the time. And I would go get a cup of espresso. Mm-hmm. Espresso. I don't know why I did that. That was crazy. That was wild.
That's
okay. Yeah. Let's move on. I would hit this coffee shop. And I remember when I first got there. I sat down, I would read. I would typically read my Bible or I would study.
Yeah.
And then I met this guy and he walks over and he's like, Barack Obama. And that is that is how our relationship started. Oh man. It's eventually I was like, Mussolini. Machiavelli. That was like our thing. Malcolm X.
I'm screaming. Okay.
So we would just name stereotypical like race, black or Italian folks that we knew. It was wonderful. But at the end of that trip, we were able to have conversations.
Right.
About politics, about religion, about his life,
right?
You know, in Italian, but it was only because I was fully immersed.
Because right, so
I don't know any Italian now. I got friends who speak Italian. Yeah,
use it.
Nah,
if you don't use it, you lose it.
Okay, we don't do stereotypical sayings on this show.
That's crazy because I'm full of them. That's crazy.
Hey yo, you know that's something that I think about a lot. With Amari, though, you know, just being in an interracial relationship. Bump it. We're just going to go to topic two.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's talk.
Oh.
Interracial.
Yeah.
I just found a random interracial for those who are looking at the video podcast.
You couldn't even, like, try to do me and my family, at least? What in the world?
I could have did mine. I don't know what I was thinking.
I don't understand.
This was like a stock photo.
You said Google Images. Interracial family.
I did.
Find. Okay.
I'm crying.
Okay.
I did. I shut up. Okay. All right. So interracial relationships.
Yeah.
Man, dude, it's just something that when I first met my wife, mm-hmm. Megan, white woman.
What did you say? Okay.
I don't know. I don't know why I said it like that. That was weird. Dude, I had only, my preference was black women. Honest to God.
Right.
Honest to God, only wanted to date black women.
Right.
Just gotten out of an engagement, actually.
Okay.
To a wonderful black woman, but just was not going to work out. And so moved here to St. Louis, started going to this church here locally, Crossings Church St. Louis, shout out. And I had no eyes for Megan. None. None. I was looking for some Hershey's, you know? I'm
screaming.
I did not expect Hellman's.
Right.
You know? I'm trying my best here to you, sirs, that people would relate to.
Okay. Keep it going.
All right. Well, anyways, it really was, man. I, long story short, I felt released from my engagement, you know, all that stuff. And the next day I was at church and I had a really tough week and I had a bunch of brothers who were around me. And they were all like, man, Darius, I was texting you, man, what happened? You know, I was trying to reach out to you this week. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I was a little depressed. Mm-hmm. You know, I should have been better. I'm like, oh, man, it's all good. And then here comes this white woman. She pokes her head into that conversation.
I'm like imagining it right now.
Oh, dude.
I can literally see it.
And she's like, yeah, when you're going through a tough time, it's better to lean into relationships in a way. Everyone's like, Meg, if you don't get your old nosy behind out of here.
Yep.
Hey, that's my girl, man. And you know what's funny? That's when it clicked, because the weeks before that, she had been asking me random questions. Like, hey, what college did you go to?
Oh, okay.
But then she never told me her name. So she would say, hey, you know, where'd you go to school?
Yeah.
Oh, I went here. I'm like, oh, okay. She'll walk away. I thought she was weird, bro. I was like, is this random white chick 3 straight weeks asking me questions?
Okay.
And then so when they say, Megan, get your, I'm like, oh, that's her name.
Okay.
And then I also was like, you know, I need someone who honestly is going to hold me accountable to things. Because when I self-isolate and get depressed, that's not good.
Yeah, no, I've seen it.
Hey, yo, that got real. That got real. Hey, yo, it's ugly. It's ugly. He who finds a wife finds a good thing. And so then she was like, she was walking away. I was like, oh, she kind of thick a little bit. And the story ends. Oh, man.
And now you have a child on the way. Another child on the way.
Yeah. Naomi. Yeah. Naomi Jean. That's my girl already. Yeah, she's a dancer, dude.
She's going to be wrapped around.
Here's the thing, though. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Oh, man. That's a whole different conversation. My wife asked me what I wanted for my birthday. Mm-hmm. And you see, we still in the basement. You know, like and subscribe for those who are here from day one. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, you want to build a studio out? Oh, you want a new camera? I was like, no, I want a gun. Yeah, it got real.
Oh, yeah.
Never wanted a gun before. And now I'm like having a daughter. And I'm like, oh, you know, I might need to.
She has like a little bit
strapped.
Of time. Like,
no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, the dad in me has already kicked
it. Oh,
in.
I like it. Okay.
It's go time. You know what I'm saying? Yep. What's the movie? I think it was either Will Smith and Martin Lawrence or 50 Cent where his daughter like brings home.
Bad Boys.
Oh, is it Bad Boys?
Yeah.
And they go to the back room.
Yeah.
And there's just a bunch of dudes just.
I think it was, right? No.
No, I think that was a 50 Cent movie.
But Bad Boys did too.
They did something like that too.
They did.
They pressed them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He like was taking her to prom or something.
Oh.
They answered the door. They were just acting outrageous.
Martin Lawrence.
Outrageous.
That's the energy I'm bringing.
See, I think.
My daughter's first date, for sure, with my boys.
I think what's funny is like. I think I'm going to be that person.
Oh, man.
Not Sherman.
The Shermanator is not going to.
No, he's very cool, calm, and collective.
He really is.
Like, I feel like I'm going to be the one that's like, they're going to meet and then they're going to be like, oh. Then
so like, Asian yeah. mother.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, yeah, I put a tracker in your car.
Asian mother.
And also sugar in your tank. Like, I'm just going to be like, they're going to be like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I just want you to know. Like, you mess with her, you mess with me.
Hey, yo.
Like, just be aware.
That's gangster.
And Sherman's just going to be like, yeah, don't do it. It's not worth your time. He was like, she's crazy. Don't do it. He was like, he's going to be like, don't. Just don't.
Sherman's my dog, man.
Yeah. So I think that Sherman's going to be like nice and calm. And then I'm going to just be the crazy one.
You know, it's
just absolutely.
Not with a straight face.
Absolutely. Insane.
Y'all caught that on camera, right? Crazy with a straight face. Y'all saw that, right?
Insane.
Hey, yo. This is why you, Kayla, our friend Kayla and Meg, I just can't get y'all in the same room because this energy is, y'all's crazy energy is different.
I know. They really flame you. We have group text messages and they be flaming. I try.
Oh,
I throw
man.
Little shots in there.
That's
for
my those are my dogs. Kayla's definitely gonna get on the podcast soon. Nah, dude, like I feel like the thing that you said that I connect a lot to though is with Amari. I think about this. And you know, it's funny, black people, there's some black people who would disagree with this. But the way that I talk to Amari is you're 100% black and 100% white, but you're also 100% black.
Don't forget that.
Right. But because it's so true in this world, you know, you very much so, your mother's culture, everything from the Creole in her to the Eastern European in her to the Southern European in her, like all of that stuff, God made no mistakes about blessing you with, and you should know your heritage. And you should be able to enjoy your Hellmann's.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Make your little cold cut with the Hellmann's, son. Like, do your thing.
It's good like that.
Yeah. All right. Now come over here and get some fried chicken. That's all. No, too much stereotypes. All right. Bring it really back in. Nah, man, but it's like for real. And it's like, but man, in this world, you still, as brown as your skin is, as much as your mom's culture is in you and is you, you're still going to be black.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't like it's weird because I'm a dark skinned black man, and the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice, right? So they're just things in which I just even accidentally am just going to be unapologetically about because I just am darker skin. And so him being lighter skin, there's cultural pieces that he can pick and choose from,
Yeah.
right? But you still black.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? And so there's like that piece that I'm trying to figure out. How do I navigate that to allow him to grow up and appreciate both sides of his culture holistically? Similar to how you're doing with your kids, but from a black and white perspective. And the reality is, you black.
Yeah. All the time. That's what Sherman says all the time whenever he gets a chance. Like, you're black. And they're like, okay. I think that it takes time for them just to understand. 'Cause
Yeah.
Michael does. Like, Michael was 100% like, he's like, yeah, I'm black and Asian.
Yeah.
My mom is Asian. My dad's black. But you know, Mackenzie, but she's just
Yeah.
stubborn. Maybe, I don't know. That
You know,
child.
Kids is
She's
so
built
different. She
different.
might have to have her own episode.
Oh, she just baby. Talk about going viral. That girl. Listen, she would be like, oh,
Yeah.
she would love that. She would just wouldn't be talking to you. She'd be talking to herself.
Oh my
She'd be like,
gosh.
what?
Oh my
What
God.
am
Not
I?
a camera
Who
and a
am I?
mic and let me talk.
Yeah.
Dude, she should have her on YouTube. What's happening?
No. Because she's five. What do you mean? She's already just doing things that, like, I'm like, what in the world? Like, what is she? We went to Five Below and I let her pick out something. And she was like, oh, I need this. And it was like a headband. And I knew what the headband was used for. Like, it's when you put your hair back and you wash your face. But Mackenzie, honey,
Yeah.
when she walked in, I was like, what is this headband for? And she was like, you put it on so you can wash your face.
Not with that
And I was
face.
like,
Hey, yo.
first off, I don't even use one.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know where she, like, I don't know.
Yo, that's
Yeah.
crazy. Candace is different. She built different, bro.
It's COVID babies, I think. It's COVID babies are all built different. That's what I believe.
Dude, you know, it's so the thing that I think about too with this, there's you're black, you're Asian, you're black, you're white, 100%. God makes no mistakes. And then there's Christian culture. You know what I'm saying? Like it's navigating all of that. That sometimes can be very tough. And kind of this kind of goes a little bit back to DEI and kind of goes a little bit to where we're going with interracial dating, but it's like, how can I be the image bearer God made no mistakes about in my culture, in my expression, in my zealousness, and in my personality, and having those moments where it's like, I'm still Christian above it all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
Like
yeah.
navigating that also is a train wreck
Yeah.
sometimes. because there are times where I've been in situations in church leadership, where I've been in situations when predominantly white congregations, where I'm like, y'all, this is a little bit more white than it is Christ.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Like you're not pushing the gospel.
Right, right, right. We're not talking the same language.
You gave me some extra mayo on this sandwich.
Miracle Whip.
Hey, that's the black. Hey, that's black though.
Oh.
Miracle Whip is black.
Okay. Oh.
That was a whole debate. We had a whole debate in this house.
Oh.
It's Hellman's, Duke's, and Miracle Whip. Miracle Whip is black.
Duke's, yeah.
Duke's is like number two to Hellman's, apparently.
I'm going to have to ask Sherman.
This is a serious debate.
I don't know if he's going to agree with you.
What is he? Is he a Duke's guy?
He's a Duke's guy.
Oh, man. He's the first. Everyone I've known is Hellman's.
I don't know. I can't really speak for him now. Now I'm scared. Because what if he's like, he's going to listen and be like, I never said that. I'm gonna be like, oh, I don't know. Sorry. I don't know.
Oh, man.
But like, yeah, I mean, we'd be always buying Duke's instead of Hellman's.
Really?
Yeah.
Not Miracle Whip.
But now I would
have
say,
Miracle Whip in the refrigerator.
No, he doesn't let me buy Miracle Whip. He doesn't like it.
No, it's terrible.
He does not like it.
You got to do Romeo. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. No racial. If y'all still on the Miracle Whip, yeah. No judgment.
I like it.
Y'all still on the Miracle Whip. Really? Because you like black man. That's why. All right. Let's get back to the conversation here.
Trying to make that make sense. Hold on. It's like,
Miracle Whip's black. You married Sherman. Blackpeoplemeet.com.
It's not Black People Meet.
Let's get into that story. You're running from the inevitable. How did you and Sherman meet?
He was my reading mentor in elementary school.
Stop playing with me. That is great. In elementary school is wild. Hey, that's crazy. Actually, you know, it's funny. I actually know of a friend. Will not say their name.
Okay.
Who taught a student in high school.
Okay.
Then years later.
Right, right. Yeah.
Better. Met the student again.
Yeah.
And they got married.
Right, right.
Crazy for me. Just the energy of that as well.
Yeah.
Elementary is.
It's how long we've been together.
Stop playing with me. Stop.
How did we meet together? You know, Darius loves bringing this up. Like, it's like his favorite thing to do. Like, if I ever became like, I don't know, like the president of the United States, he'd be like, hold on, let me introduce you really quick. Oh,
yeah. Autobiography.
Like, yeah. He'd be like, do you guys know how Dynasty and Sherman met?
From
like,
Black Planet to the presidency.
Listen, I would write a story for Black Planet if that's true. Like that.
Do they still exist?
It does. It is.
Get out of town.
Yeah. Me, Khalil, and Sherman looked it up the other day. Because they were like, it's gone. And I was like, it's not gone. And then I, you know, Googled it. And sure enough, there it was.
That's crazy.
And then they were like, find your old profile. And I was like, no. No. So I hate that you guys. Jack, too. He loves that story. And he'll do it. Like,
one of the best stories in the world. You're still delaying the inevitable.
I am. But he'll do it in like very inappropriate settings. Like, it will be like, oh, these are board members. Hey, did you guys hear about how to
board members? Hey. Like,
oh, wow. Okay.
Nah, that's crazy. My man Jack is wild for that, bro.
It's just anybody. Anybody.
Hey, yo.
And Sherman are around each other. He's like, yeah, let me tell this story.
What's the Shermanator is just like, whatever. He's so chill.
Yeah.
The homie is so chill.
Yeah. He is.
All right. I'm going to tell y'all how they met because he's rutted from us right now. Oh, would you like me to share?
Yeah. Let me hear your take on this, please.
Hey, so internet, this is how my friend Dynasty and my friend Sherman met.
Okay.
It was college, right?
I'm listening to your take. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Were you like late high school?
I'm listening to your take.
Oh, no, you were, weren't you? It was like, you were like, just like either fresh out of high school or still in high school, right?
I was a senior.
There we go. Oh, not light on your profile.
I did not lie. First off, I said that I was 17. I did not lie.
Hey, that's crazy. Don't you gotta be like 18 to get on the site?
No, you can be like 15.
That's terrifying.
Yes.
Mid-2000s was a wild time.
I did not.
The internet was crazy. Listen,
yes. 2005 to be exact. It was a crazy time then.
Oh, man. So we got two teens.
Yes.
We're going to contextualize that.
Yep.
And
teenager.
Blackplanet.com.
Yeah.
Dynasty decided to use the one time she had a nice tan as her photo.
First off, absolutely not. There's a plethora of photos, okay? Me from summertime and not summertime and wintertime, okay?
What? Oh, man. So there's a term the kids use nowadays. It's called thirst trap. 17, looking like a Blaziken. Blazion. Did I say Blazion Pokemon? Okay. I promise you I have a doctorate. And Sherman was like, oh, look at this black woman.
That is not what he said. He did not say that.
Trapped. Got him. Hook ladder.
First off.
Here comes Michael.
If you would have read anything about my profile and read the bio, it said like I am Chinese Cambodian. I did not say I was mixed with black. I did not say I was half black.
Yeah, yeah.
That was literally when you scroll down, the first thing is like I am.
But he didn't scroll down.
Nah.
So he just saw a Blasian woman and swipe left on Black Planet. Come on now, let's contextualize this.
First off, I just want to let you know that Black Planet said we like everybody. Okay. And before I decided to join at the age of 17,
that's crazy.
I was like, let me make sure that I am allowed to join. And it said, we welcome all.
Oh, okay. See?
All.
DEI back in 2000, whatever.
And I said, well, let me browse profiles. Okay. I saw a little bit of everything. Okay. I saw white. Okay. I saw Hispanic.
Man.
Yes.
So what was their niche? What was Black Planet's niche? I thought it was like.
When I say I saw all, like, was there like just like one or two profiles? Yes. Wasn't like
majority were still black.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like 98%.
As that tagline. Yeah.
No.
We accept everyone. Black. Yes. That's like, oh.
Like there was like if I went through 100 profiles, dude, maybe like
five of them. I'm actually okay with specific types of dating sites.
Yeah.
Like farmersmeet.com.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
Like
Christian Meet,
Christian Mingle.
Yeah, I don't know of any others.
I'm sure there's like stuff for like Islam and Asian and like, you know, country.
It's just not on like it's not on the commercials.
If you have a preference, you know.
Yeah.
If you know, I need me a country girl.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Then you go to farmers
with the boots up.
Yes.
And blonde hair, blue eyes, white. Mm-hmm. Then you probably gonna find her on Farmers.
Yep.
And if you know you want a black man and you know where they gonna be at, you gonna make that profile. Let me stop messing with you.
Hi.
This is great. Oh, man. All right. I got it out of me.
For now.
No, seriously though. Interracial dating. Was it easy dating Sherman? I feel like those are two different questions. Let me preface. I feel like I love my wife with all my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one else I can imagine myself being with.
Period.
Like in terms of me and her.
Right.
That's tight. That's good.
Yeah.
Love her.
Right.
What I mean is the second question maybe is in society.
Right.
Within family dynamics, within culture.
Right. Right.
How was that?
Yeah. So Sherman's family was wonderful. They were super accepting. Unlike you, where, you know, previously all the women you had dated were Black, you know, for Sherman.
Oh, I thought you were talking about my messing with you before.
For Sherman, I was the first person, like, of color for him. Like, and, you know, his mom was very excited.
Oh, yeah, see, I didn't know that. So you were the first person of color. So you only dated.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, girlfriends. Let's bring home to mom girlfriends.
Got you. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, but Sherman also hasn't dated a lot. Yeah, he had, like, two serious girlfriends. So, but yes, mom was excited. She was lovely. She was very supportive.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she is a great mother-in-law. And for him, I think the difficult part was, like, assimilating to my family and, like, my culture. My brother and Sherman get along really great. My brother is really awesome, laid back. He is the boy version of me.
Yeah.
Like, so he's like, he's a good time. He's probably even more fun, honestly.
Yeah.
So they got along great. It's just my parents. It was very difficult.
Were there some preconceived things?
Yeah.
Cause I feel like,
yes,
one of the hidden secrets that I hear all the time, don't get it twisted. I don't know nothing, but something I hear is Asian culture loves Black culture, but a lot of Asian cultures still see Black people as bottom feeders and socially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can definitely see that specifically, like, within the, like, Chinese and, like, Japanese and Korean, right? But, like, for Asia, for me, Cambodians, I don't really see that as much.
Gotcha.
For, like, for them, you know, they want the smaller, like, they like the Western look where it's, like, smaller lips, very light skin. They like, you know, very, like, small body shapes.
So they wanted you to marry a white guy.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just beat around the bush, Dynasty.
They did.
Yeah, that's honest.
They, and I will say, like, have they ever, like, outright said that to me? No. Like, they weren't, like, for real, though, they weren't even thinking about men. They were just like, go to college. And then after you go, you're finished with college, you just get married. And I was like, who am I marrying? But,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they never talked to me about, like, who I was supposed to be with, but I know that they wanted me to be with a white man.
Yeah.
Or a Cambodian man.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That makes sense. And so that just threw them off.
Yeah. It took a while.
Yeah.
For them to warm up to Sherman. It was a while.
Yeah.
It's
honest.
Yeah. It took them so long. Maybe, like, a couple years. And it was just, yeah. And it was finally, like, at that point, they were like, oh, I guess you're not leaving her. And you'll stay around. So we'll be nice. And that's the thing, is, like, they were always polite, but they weren't nice.
It wasn't embrace.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be like, oh, Sherman's here. And they'd just be like, and I'd be like, okay, well, we're going to go hang out now.
It must have been really hard for you, though, because this is a person that you love.
Right. Yeah.
These are people that you love, like your parents.
Yeah.
And who both you want to be in your life all your life.
Yeah.
Feel that tension.
Yeah.
That's hard, man.
It's, yeah, it was really difficult for me, but for me, I just kind of saw them as in the wrong, so I never, like, felt bad for it. Like, I was like, no, they're wrong. It's just, no.
Man.
Yeah. So, I mean, Sherman and I have been together for, what is it, 20 years now?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
20 years, yeah.
Congratulations. I wish my soundboard worked. I would have clapped that.
I'm screaming.
It's beautiful, man. You don't see people making it 20 years no more, man.
20 years. So
it's beautiful, dude. I really love y'all's love, man.
Yeah, but it's toxic. It was. I mean, it's good now.
We're honest.
Yeah, but, like, it, before, when we were younger, absolutely terrible, toxic. Yeah. Like, we were not good for
each other. I will say this. whether you're interracial dating or you are in the same race or culture, you need a community around you, mm-hmm. right? You need people who know both of you, mm-hmm. know y'all as a couple, who yeah. know your family and can yeah. invest in your lives. Because I just don't believe that relationships just are easy.
No, they're hard.
Especially marriage.
Yeah, marriage is work.
It is.
Marriage is work.
And then you add the cultural dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very lucky that Sherman and I both agree on a lot of things.
Yeah.
And we both really see eye to eye with yeah. like a lot of situations. So there isn't very much, like, there's no issues really.
Yeah.
Like, especially it's like, if he's like, oh, you know, I felt this way. I'm like, oh, me too. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. You saw it then. Yeah. I'm like, yep, I saw it.
Do you feel like the deepest root being faith is the best unifier in terms of y'all's marriage? Like, is that like,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the if I don't know if I could marry someone who wasn't Christian.
You know what's crazy is, yeah. no, we did not bond off of that.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
No, I mean, we were young, so we were bonding off of what young people do.
Ah. Got it.
So that is what kind of held us together for a long time. Mm. And it wasn't until, like, we had kids.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, we never went to church. Mm. We never talked about church. Except for he always would be like, I'm not Mormon. I'll never be Mormon. I'm not.
That's right. Because your family. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was converted at 5. And then, you know, I stopped going when I was like 16.
Why did you're Sherman. That was not him. What was that? Why did you sound like a smoker there? We don't do that. Sherman does not sound like
you're
that.
Right. Hey, he would be yo. So offended. Hey, yo. Listen, I don't know how to sound like him. Okay. That's my impression.
I don't know why that just got me riled up. I'm like, oh, don't disrespect my guy like that.
But yeah, no, we never talked about it. We never, like, I mean, I would go to church with him because his dad's a preacher.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he would take me, like, if his grandma would say, like, meet us at this church, we would go. And, like, we would both agree on things like, dang, that was long. Or, like, oh, I'm hungry. Like, like, you know, we would agree, like, oh, they didn't stop singing. Like,
oh, man.
You know, so we both saw eye to eye with, like, a lot of those things. But, no, we never went to church. Our relationship on our own. Yeah. It was just like, hey, let's find a church for us. No, we didn't do that until we had kids.
That's real.
Yeah.
Hot take. Real hot take.
Hot take.
Before I really loved Jesus.
Okay.
Best naps, Black Baptist Church.
Yeah. I mean.
Just saying.
Yeah. That's, I mean, yeah.
One time, I'll never forget this. It was my Nana's church. It was hour two. I finally was like, I can't do it. Out. Mom elbows me.
Yeah.
She says, wake up.
Yes.
I woke up. I said this. My mom will tell you. I said, Mom, isn't it better for me to fall asleep in the presence of the Lord in the peace of God than any other place? Dude, she was like, I can't even. I was a smart, you know what, kid.
Gosh. Okay.
Still not wrong, though.
Like I said, we agreed on all those things. We said, wow, I'm tired.
Yeah.
It said start at 11,
yeah.
end at 12, but it's 2. What's happening?
Yeah. I think with me and Meg, there were a lot of things in our relationship because, I mean, we didn't do all the things, right? We just genuinely were trying to build a relationship right. and trying to build like it on Jesus.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying,
right.
you know what I'm saying? But I'm saying this relationship, yeah. all glory to God. And that's just our testimony. So there were things,
right.
There were things that as a white woman, I would try to get her to understand, but I didn't want to educate her on.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I had to learn very quickly in a racial relationship is, if this woman is your partner, if this is your partner and there's some ignorance,
right.
there is a obligation for us to try to understand,
mm-hmm.
But in that same breath,
you got to teach.
We got to teach.
You have to teach.
And I hated that. I did. I hated that because I had always had a mentality of,
you should just know.
No, not even just you should know. You need to figure it out yourself.
Ah.
But I'm also coming from an activist background. I'm also coming from a like fist in the air, BLM era, like background where I just was exhausted by white people. So I was bringing a lot of trauma into our relationship. So I didn't have a lot of patience with this woman who I loved. And I was constantly battling the tension between my blackness, you know what I'm saying? Like fried bologna sandwich. And then now Hellman's is
so good.
Trying to get on to that wheat bread there. And I'm like, hey, wait, we don't do Hellman's on fried bologna sandwiches. It's not a thing. Oh, man. It was tough, man. Yeah. It was tough. And I honestly did not do a good job of loving my wife, my girlfriend at the time in that season. And I had a lot of people in my life who were either in interracial relationships. It was a black relationship or it was like white or different relationships who would tell me, hey, dude, you've got to have more grace. And if I were to give advice to anyone in an interracial relationship, grace has to be at the forefront. Everything that you do, because there's going to be a lot of ignorance unintentionally.
Right. Yeah, for sure. There is. I guess, how old were you and Meg when you guys met?
Oh, dude. Man, how old was I? 2024, I met her in 2018, 6 years ago. Jeez, I was like 24, 25.
Okay. So I think like for Sherman and I, you know, I was 17.
Yeah.
And he was 19. And we had to learn to grow up together. So there's a lot of things that we didn't get to like experience in a way as like an adult relationship would. Because we were both kids. Like, we were both so young, you know. So it was, like, in a way, it's, like, we taught each other things.
Yeah, that's so good.
Where, like, obviously now, I'm 37, imagining if we ever got divorced, which he would never let me do. And I always tell him I'm going to run away with a white man. But
that's so messed up.
And he's just like, okay. He's like, they'd give you back. I'm like,
hey, yo, that's why I love y'all. Y'all just like roast each other and it's so funny.
So,
but the love is so real.
Real, yeah. So I don't even know what I'm talking about. Girl. I forgot to take my medicine this morning.
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't even know what to say. No, I'll tell you a quick story here, because I want to transition, but there are two things I want to say. First thing is, when it comes to Meg's family, her mom knew I was the one. She was so funny. She goes to our church. So she comes home from church one day and tells Meg, hey, have you met that new black, young, handsome, tall dude who's coming around? And Meg's like, oh, you mean Darius? Yeah, I met him. She's like, oh, okay. Like, just trying to fill it out a little bit. And then when she found out, we went on a date. She was like, I know it. She was really excited. And I just think Mama Mary has just been, and my brother and sister-in-law, just absolutely phenomenal in terms of just embracing me. And I think the beautiful part of my relationships with them is that I can be unapologetically who I am.
Yeah.
And not feel like I have to change or move.
I love that. Yeah.
And so it's just beautiful.
That is beautiful.
And I think with my father-in-law, I was a little bit more concerned at first. I was concerned because he was a lot more conservative, very conservative. And I'm just like, oh gosh. And I remember us getting at a place where when me and Meg were getting really serious and we were talking about raising kids, you know, he made a joke about, you know, having to reteach my son, like, you know, whatever mom and dad teaches you about.
Right.
You know, I got to teach you what's right. And he was making a joke about it.
Yeah.
But like for me, that's like
not funny.
It's not funny.
Right.
But it's funny, man, in the sense of Papa Joe is one of my favorite people in the entire world. And I think we've really been able to build a really strong relationship. I know how much he loves me. Mm-hmm. I know how much he sees that I love his daughter. Mm-hmm. And even though we would have disagreements in different places and different points, rightfully so, at times, there's a lot of commonalities that we have and a lot of ways in which he has allowed me to parent and just lead his daughter that I just appreciate, man. He's literally one of my favorite people in the world now.
That's awesome.
But I think those are the things that I value in my marriage is building a family with her. Mm-hmm. Because I've had to learn a lot about what does it mean to love a woman like my wife? What does it mean to love her and allow her to be who she is? I felt like the first part of my relationship was struggling so much to feel like I can be who I am. Mm-hmm. I got to be Black. I got to be right. Darius. I got to be, you know, these things that I think I fell short in just allowing my wife to be Megan, to be white, like to be culturally who she is and learning how to love her in that. I had to go to therapy. Yeah. Like I literally had to deal with past trauma. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think her family made it easier though.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, it really was. I think with my mom's side, my dad's side, both of my grandmothers said something along the lines of, when you bring it home, you're Black queen, all my life.
Okay.
But I remember my grandmother, her health was dying really fast, and I brought Meg to visit Christmas on my dad's side, and it was the Christmas before she passed away. My grandmother met Meg. They sat, they talked. They laughed, they hung out. And I remember asking my grandmother after that, and say, hey, what do you think of Megan? She was like, when are you going to marry that girl? That's the one. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was like, oh, well, I thought I had to marry a Black woman. Like, right, this is because I was like, oh, I want to marry her too, but I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure, Grandma.
You're okay with it, you know?
Like, yeah, like that's the one. And then my Nana also, when you bring on your Black queen.
Right.
I remember. It was Christmas. We were playing Discretion, which is Black Taboo. You ever played Discretion? It's Black Taboo. So it's all Black specific taboo cards.
No, I've never heard of it.
Okay, it's amazing. So my family were playing Discretion.
Okay.
This is when my white wife was accepted by my Black family. Mm. I'm serious. It was always love there, but it was like, this was the moment. So we're playing Discretion and I get Juice, which is an amazing movie. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen Juice, you're missing out. What are you doing? Tupac? Crazy. So it's one of my favorite movies. I'm describing it perfectly. Boom. I'm like proving my Blackness right now. I'm like, bow, 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 like this. Boom, boom. I'm like, come on, y'all know this. Meg yells, skip it. We're wasting time. And everyone's like, yeah, skip it, man. We don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, nah, I'm describing this movie perfectly. Y'all go get this one. Went the whole 60 seconds. No one got it. And I was like, man, threw it on the table. Meg picks it up and says, Juice? You could have said cranberry, orange, grape. We're trying to get the point, Darius. And everybody in my family dies laughing and say, yeah, dude, what are you doing?
You said, I'm going to make this hard.
And that's where everyone was like, we like her. She cool. And it was just cool seeing her just move. She was just moving as Megan. She wasn't trying to be
anything,
but who she was. And my family loved that about her. And so then there's a time in our household where my Nana, this is Christmas Eve, she will bring everyone around to get presents. And it's an honor to be Nana's elf. That's the person who grabs the present under the tree and passes them out. And so we're about to do this tradition. And my Nana looks around and she yells, where's my Megan at?
And she wanted Megan to do it.
And so then Megan comes in the room and Nana, she just points at a present. Grab that one. Meg picks it up, passes it. Grab that one. And that was my Nana's way of saying, she's ours.
Proved.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, man. It's love, man. Favorite interracial couple of all time?
I'm gonna say, because I'm not good at, you know, these types of questions.
Okay.
But I had to think about it. And I'm glad that I kind of like looked it up before we started recording, because I would have sat here for a while and just stared at you. You know who I really love? And it's, I don't know why, but I really love Lauren and Cameron from Love is Blind season one.
That's not even a celebrity couple. Hey.
They were on Netflix. They're kind of a celebrity. That is, I love them.
Okay.
She's queen.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen those things on TikTok? It's like the black woman effect.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about like Dirk and his wife?
Yeah. It's like before.
Oh, yeah.
And then like after.
Dirk Nowitzki's wife got him with aluminum foil, styrofoam, dinner to go plates to the game.
I love it. Yeah.
Energy is different.
Yes. That his energy was different after he met Lauren.
Yeah.
And it's very clear.
I love it, man.
She supported him. Helped him look better. Yeah.
Hey, man. That's good, man. Yeah. That's awesome. Favorite famous interracial couple? I mean, shout out to the Lovings, you know, who made it all possible. Serena and Alexis, the dude from Reddit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know.
You're talking about glow up. Mm-hmm. But also, Serena, she black.
Yeah.
She Compton black.
Yeah.
She crip walking.
She's crip walking. I saw her.
At the Super Bowl black.
Sea walking. Yeah.
But what I think I love about them is that they epitomize what I believe every interracial couple in an ideal sense should be, unapologetically who you are, and allowing the other person to culturally be that, but then also, you know, understanding the blend of that and what can be possible is really awesome. Like, Alexis wasn't, you know, I'm the CEO of Reddit, you know, I need you to not be too black this time around. No, he was like, baby, go ahead.
Yeah, do you.
Do you.
I love that.
And him not feeling the need to be on stage too is what I appreciate. It's like, no, like, I'm 100% supporting you. I'm here with you.
Yep.
It's not my place to be on that stage. It's not my place to be on camera at the Super Bowl.
What would he have done?
But that's the thing. Like, you get some couples, it's like, oh, I got to be up there with my girl.
I would have liked to see him do that.
Yo, the CEO of Reddit sea walking.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
Hey, yo, that would be kind of wild.
Yeah.
Hey.
That would be, yeah.
But I think Serena also is really interesting, because I feel like there's some interracial couples where they become their partners in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see, I can see Serena in a Beyonce film and at the Met Gala and at Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's Serena. I'm not thinking about anyone else but who this woman is. And maybe that's a branding thing. But I just feel like she's able to be who she is.
Yeah. She is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good time.
That was a good
time. I enjoyed watching that.
Racial draft real fast.
What is this again? We gotta pick who we want.
Who do you want? Asian delegation, Chappelle Show style. You can draft one person.
Anybody.
Anybody.
And
they have to, like,
anybody.
They aren't Asian. Cambodian, however you want to be more specific, but you get to draft them.
Okay, to be Asian.
Because they like represent it. Asian culture, even though they're not Asian.
Yeah, okay. Let me look at my notes.
Not your notes.
I had to study before coming here. Asian draft. Oh, I know who I picked.
Who?
Okay, let me give you the beat. And then you have to guess.
Who are Asian people drafting? A lot of pressure.
Oh my gosh. Okay, ready? Obviously, a musician.
Okay.
All right, ready?
I'm so silly. Pharrell? Are you Pharrell right now?
First off, absolutely. The beat, absolutely terrible.
Oh, dude.
For the disrespect, because that was real bad. But yes.
I can see that, man. Yeah. Is he biracial?
I don't think so.
He kind of looks a little.
Yeah, I don't think so, though. I think he's black, just like full.
And he loves Asian culture.
Yeah, I think, right?
We'll give y'all Pharrell. We like Pharrell. We got a lot of producers, though. Almost the whole industry. It's fine.
Yes.
Y'all can have Pharrell. And he's still invited to the cookout, so.
Yeah. I'm going to actually Google that when I get home.
Is he invited to the cookout?
No.
Pharrell is definitely invited to the cookout. No, what are we arguing right now?
The type of Asian. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. I don't know.
We'll give y'all Pharrell. Eminem is the obvious one.
And
black people nominate Eminem.
What about Paul Wall? Or Bubba Sparks?
Not Bubba Sparks. Hey, yo, nah, we got Paul Wall. Paul Wall, okay.
Okay.
This Eminem is the embodiment of a white dude who is 100% hip hop, 100% culture. I would say Eminem gets black culture, and I would never question he would use the N-word.
Right.
Ever. Okay. I don't think Eminem would ever use the N-word, but Eminem's definitely invited to the cookout.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another rapper. What's his name? I'm not really good with this new young music. Malone?
Post Malone. We got some issues with Posty.
No, it's not him.
We got issues with Posty.
He's young.
Black community.
Jack Harlow.
Oof. That's a little bit tougher. I feel like he's invited to the cookout, okay. But we're not drafting him.
Okay, I got it.
Like we like Jack,
but
dude, oh man, Dynasty man, I love you, my friend. Oh, dude. Okay, all right.
Okay,
let's get to the last topic. It's getting a little late.
It is. Let's come to Jesus. Let's bring it around back.
Circle. Black delegation is drafting Jesus for sure.
Yeah, because he's black.
Well, that's controversial.
I know. I know, you're right.
Nah, dude, one of my favorite things, I didn't want to spoil this at the very beginning. Dynasty, your story is something that is really touch-worthy. If you haven't liked to subscribe, at this point, we're an hour and a half into this thing. That's kind of crazy.
Wow.
What is wrong with you? If you haven't followed Dynasty, if you haven't seen her sweatshirt, barbecue, Sherman actually is phenomenal at the Q's. But man, your story is something that has inspired me. I remember being at your baptism. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not afraid to cry. I was boohoo crying because I know in our relationship where you've been at with the Lord and man, what you've wanted out of your relationship with God, and to be able to be there in that moment, yeah. It just like really brought me to tears because I know that decision wasn't something that you made lightly. It was, particularly knowing your background with the Church of Latter-day Saints, and man, I'm tearing up right now thinking about it. It's just been really cool. It's been really cool to be able to walk this life with you, my friend. I feel like your story is worth sharing.
Yeah.
And I would love for you to share sort of the beginning of that journey and the come to Jesus moment that you had.
So it's, you know, I was born, not born, wow. I was converted into Latter-day Saints at 5. And I went to church till I was 16, but obviously I'm young, and in like Mormons do baptisms at 8 years old. That's like when you accept Jesus and you know, you want to like repent all your sins and you know, all those things. But I feel like when I look back, like I didn't know anything about God, right? Like for me specifically, like I was just doing whatever they said and I was just following in their like footsteps. And like, I knew that God was real. I knew, but like my faith wasn't there. Mm. And so like I had said, like Sherman and I's relationship, we never really talked about church. We never talked about like our faith. We just agreed on certain things. And it was just like, oh, what kind of church do you like? And he's like, one that ends on time and starts on time. I was like, me too. Or I'd be like, do you like this church? Like the music's not hitting. And I'm like, yeah, I don't like it either. Like, so we never really got to like talk about those things. And so it was, and I'm so excited in the sense of like you coming to my baptism, but like you really seeing this part of me, because not a lot of people have, because it's still fairly new. Like it's still, I'm still like discovering myself. And honestly, if you ask Sherman right now, he would say the water wasn't holy enough that have baptized me, because he's like, I don't know what is happening. He's like, but you need to get rebaptized. And I'll be like, that's not how it works, Sherman. And he's like,
holiness is a process. Yeah,
he's like, oh man, I like this. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I was like, I'm still man. I still sin. And he's like, you're supposed to be God now. And I'm like, I hate you. Why are you like this? So like for me specifically, you know, I've always known that God was real. I have, you know, I've always had some type of like faith, because I always would, when I was younger, you know, I would always be like, I can't wait till I turn 18 and, you know, and get me out of this home. And, you know, he provided a way, right? Like I met Sherman, like right when I was turning 18, Sherman kind of gave me an exit to my life. Back in Virginia. And it was just like, come with me, come live in Richmond. So I was like, okay, so clearly like there's someone watching over me. There's someone taking care of me. There's someone protecting me. But specifically when I had my daughter, Mackenzie, my second daughter, I had left work, like I left the education industry and I became, I started working at property management. So I changed fields completely. And I was pregnant, and then, you know, at some point at like 38 weeks, you know, people and like customers at the apartment complex were like, hey, you're really big. Like, and I was like, I know, I'm having a baby. And they're like, nah, but like, you're real big. You should like make sure you go check and like make sure everything's okay. And so I went to my doctor and I was just like, I'm not feeling well. You know, this pregnancy is, you know, much harder, like way harder. And I feel like I should know what pregnancy feels like. And, you know, she was like, every pregnancy is different. Da, da, da. Well, we did an ultrasound and she said, we're going to go ahead and send you to, you know, a high risk doctor to kind of see like what's going on. And so I went in for the ultrasound and he literally like put the ultrasound like on my belly. And like, I think it was not even like 5 minutes, and it was just like, all right, well, we're going to have to induce you. And I was just like,
my goodness.
Oh, okay. And he was like, yeah, your fluids, is too high. Amniotic fluids, I think. And he was like, it's supposed to be at a 25 and you're at like a 35. And he's like, it's, you know, and he's like, we need to go ahead and induce you so that we can make sure this baby comes out healthy. Like, he was like, the risks are hemorrhaging for me, but then the cord getting wrapped around the baby's neck because it's just too much fluid and it just kind of gets wrapped as the baby's trying to come out. So I was like, okay, great. So we went to the hospital and I, you know, people always talk about like pregnancy plans or birth plans and things like that. I didn't have a plan. Like I guess my plan was, is I was going to have my baby naturally, like how I had Michael. Like Michael was natural birth, you know, it's, you know, all good. I did not want a C-section. And so we went in, I think that they tried giving me everything under the sun to try to like get the baby to come out. Like they popped my water manually. They gave me like Pitocin. They like stuck stuff inside of me to like soften my uterus. Like they were doing everything. I was sitting on like the ball trying to bounce, like get the baby out. And then finally, the nurse came in and was just like, hey, you have an infection, so we are going to go ahead and do an emergency C-section. And I remember just being so sad and like crying. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what? Like, I'm not prepared for that. And they were like, yeah, I know, we have to do it now. Like, we're doing it now. And so I was like bawling. But specifically when I had went to surgery, I'll never forget. Like, I was shivering. It was so cold. And then I remember them being like, oh, beautiful baby girl, healthy. They showed me over the curtain. And I'm like, okay. And then the last thing that I see is the baby going to get weighed or given to Sherman, something like that. And then I'm out. I'm out.
Jeez.
It's just black. And so I wake up. So I had Mackenzie at 2:30 in the morning. I wake up at some point and it's light out. And all I feel is like needles like all over me. And I'm like, what is going on? And so I wake up and there's like a nurse in my face. I look to my right. My anesthesiologist is over there like poking at my veins and my elbow, like my arms. And then there are doctors at the bottom poking at like my toes with needles. And I'm like, what is happening? And the nurse over here on my left is like, hey, we're about to do a blood transfusion. You've lost a lot of blood. We need you to go ahead and sign this. I'm like, okay. And then I'm out. And then I wake up. And then I see the nurse with the baby in my face. And like, you need to feed, you need to feed. And I'm like, I just am waking up. Like, I need a second. Like, and they were like, no, you need to feed. Like, you need to feed right now. Like, we need to feed the baby. The baby hasn't drank anything. You need to feed the baby. And I was just like, I don't know what's happening. Like, what's happening? And so Sherman had told me, you know, they bring me up to recovery. And he, from his side, what happened was, is as soon as I gave birth to the baby, you know, they sewed me up and they put me in the recovery room. And the nurses came by and they were pressing on my uterus to make sure it was closing correctly. And he said every time they pressed down to check, he was like, softball size clot, blood clots started coming out of you.
Jesus.
And he was like, they did it like at least like two times. And he was like, and it kept coming. And he was like, the anesthesiologist walked in at the right time and was like, oh my, and he was like, these nurses, it's not like they were new. And he was like, it's just something that it hadn't happened before, right? Like, no matter how much studying you do, yeah, like things like in real life like that, sometimes just kind of catch you off guard. Yeah. And so he said the anesthesiologist walked in and was just like, oh my God, like how much blood has she lost? And they were like, I don't know, like we're checking the uterus. And he was like, grab everything with her blood on it and like weigh it to see how much she's lost. And then he was like, and go get blood bags. He was like, go get all the blood bags. And so, you know, they are like in doctor mode. They are panicking. And Sherman's right there just like watching. Yeah. And like he's like holding the baby. And then he said the nurse came back with like three bags that she had on the floor and was just like, hey, this is what we have. And he was like, that's not enough. He was like, you need to go get more. He's like, from the levels, like go get them from every level or whatever. And Sherman said it felt like a scene from Grey's Anatomy, where it was just a slew of doctors and nurses like rushing in. He was like, it went from like just three people in the room to like feeling like there were 20 people in the room. And he was like, and at some point they all turned around and were like, oh my God, he's here. Like, he was like, they were so focused on you, they forgot about me. And they finally pulled me out and were just like, hey, we need to talk about, like, what happens if, you know, she doesn't make it? Like, are you okay? And he was like, no, I'm not okay. We just had a baby. Like, what? And I think that he had, like, signed something. And then the reason what makes it so difficult is it's not just because I lost the blood and because I was hemorrhaging, but I have something called like polyhydrosm. I'm saying it so wrong, but it's a retention of water. And that's why my amniotic fluid was so high. And the issue with that is it made my veins almost impossible to reach.
Jeez.
So that's why they kept poking me, because they needed to find how they could do the blood transfusion, because I was losing more blood than getting it. Jeez. And so the only thing that happens when this, you know, the doctor told me was there's only two options. We do a hysterectomy or they put something inside called a Bakke balloon and they just blow up like the balloon inside my uterus with saline water so that my uterus over time closes on its own. And so the doctor was like, usually we go the route of the hysterectomy just because it's, that is like the best plan. And she was like, but your white blood cells were so low that if we would have taken you back into surgery, she was like, you would have never came out. And so she was like, our only option was the Bakke balloon. Hopefully that it was going to fill up enough to stop the hemorrhaging. And so I was just like, oh, okay. And something that was like supposed to be so beautiful and so exciting was, you know, was awful for me. And, you know, I'm so thankful that she's healthy and, you know, beautiful, but I don't think it made it real for me until it was just like every doctor, every nurse that came and saw me, like they just kept saying like, oh my gosh, you look so good. They're like, you look so good. And, yeah. And I was just like, how did I look? And Sherman was like, you look dead. Like he was like, the blood was drained out of you. He was like, you are so white. He was like, I didn't recognize you. And so he was like, yeah, that's why I like, when I was in the recovery, like delivery nurses were coming to my floor and checking in. And so I think, you know, there was so much guilt for, you know, like a month or so, like having like the baby blues in a sense of being like, why am I still here? Like, what, like, I could have been gone and like, you know, like God could have totally just ended it right there, right? Like I could have, Sherman could have been a great father by himself, but like, why was I supposed to be here? I didn't know like what he had in store for me. I didn't know what he needed me to finish. Yeah. And so it was just hard to kind of accept that. Like, I'm here. I need to find out like why he didn't take my life. I need to find out like what is his mission for me. And that is kind of when it started. Like, I have to take like, this is a blessing.
Yeah.
This is a blessing in disguise. Like, clearly he wants me to do something with my life. Yeah. He wants me to serve others. And this is when I decided to get back into education, because I was saying I was in property management and it didn't fulfill me. It didn't, there was no passion behind it. It was just a job. Like, I enjoyed helping people find their, you know, home, but I wanted more. I wanted more fulfillment. And so, you know, it all fell into plan. And like, looking back, I see that everything is a part of his plan and his way. Amen. And his word. Amen. You know, because then my husband, you know, Sherman and I moved to South Carolina, where I became a principal of, yeah, a founding elementary school. And it was like everything was aligned, yeah, for me to follow this path. And, you know, that is kind of how like my faith grew. Amen. And realizing like, God has so much more in store for me. And I just have to trust him and trust the process, no matter how that looks.
Amen.
Right. And so, you know, that's kind of like how we got here. And, you know, because Sherman, you know, after we left South Carolina, he didn't have a job. Right. And I wasn't working either at that point, just, you know, for after I had the baby. And it was just like, what are we doing with our lives? Like, where are we going to go? And here, this is opening.
Amen.
And so, and then I meet someone like you.
Right? Yeah.
And so, but I feel like everything that I've done is to get closer to God. And that's, and I know that like, there are times, because I'm human, he is.
Yeah.
He's frustrated with me because he's like, ah, dynasty, dang it. Like,
we're going back under. We got to dip you again. Yeah, he's gotta like, wash them all.
Come on.
Yeah.
So
it's all of us. That's all of us.
Right. And so, you know, like I said, it's interesting when you asked me to be on this podcast, I haven't been going to church. Mm. I haven't. And Sherman was like, I told you need to go back to church. And he's like, I was. And I think that, like I said, everything is a part of his plan. Mm. And it's getting myself back to it, but then surrounding myself with people who love the same God, who serve the same God, who are going to encourage you to do that. And like, I'll never forget that moment in my car where I told you I was so done with work. And I was like, I'm done. I'm so over it. And watching your testimony in front of my eyes was beautiful. In
the name of Jesus.
You know, like seeing your struggles and your downfalls and then seeing that the Lord, he doesn't forget. He doesn't let go. And he brought you through it. Amen. Beautiful home, like beautiful job, you know, second baby on the way. So it's just like, no one can ever tell me that he's not real.
Amen.
Because I see so many miracles that he creates in my life every single day. So, you know, I'm still trying to figure out like what exactly he wants me to do, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's still a journey within itself.
Yeah.
But getting baptized was the first step because,
you know, it's, I feel like that's, man, thank you for sharing. I feel like the question of what is it that God wants me to do, As I've grown older, I've learned that that's not the question that he's even trying to answer, as much as I think God just, he calls us into relationship, and it's in relationship that we just, we get to exist and witness the goodness without the expectation of having to have it figured out, having to do X, Y, or Z. He just, he says, come to me. That actually our purpose is fulfilled perfectly just in his presence. And that our purpose is facilitated perfectly when we bring that presence to others. And so this testimony right now, you know, like there's someone that's going to listen to this, watch this, hear this. And that's enough.
Yeah.
You know?
And I hope that, because life is hard. It's so hard.
It is.
And I hope that though it's hard now, that you can see that there's so much more.
Yeah. Well, why don't you, for the person right now who is going through a difficult time or is potentially going through a difficult situation, what is one thing as we close out that you would want to tell them?
You are worthy. You are worthy of love. You are worthy to get to know Christ more and better. And that I know that it's hard and it's difficult, but I promise you everything is a part of his plan. Even if you cannot understand it, even if you cannot see it, you will in maybe a couple of days, months, or years be able to kind of look back and be like, ah, you had to put me down so I could see up.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. Yeah. We'll close it there.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here, dude.
Thanks for having me.
Love you, sis.
Love you.